Listening to Central Vermont Community Radio, 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM on your dial. And this is Amy's Kids Show, and it's Saturday morning, and we have a wonderful show for you lined up today. I am so super, super, super excited. We are going to finish the book that we have been reading since August. You know, some of the best stories in the world take a while to tell, right? And this is one of the best stories in the world, and its conclusion is coming right up. But first, let me tell you that community support for Amy's Kids Show is provided in part by Woodbury Mountain Toys, featuring a selection of toys and games for kids of all ages. Located at 24 State Street in Montpelier, Vermont, more information about Woodbury Mountain Toys can be found at woodburymountaintoys.com. Come in and play with us. And you can hear the dog in the background saying that in dog language. Oh yeah, listen to those dogs. Do you know dog language? Wow, they are just singing along with us today. Boy, everybody's excited. The chickens, the dogs, the cows. I know, everybody's so excited because today we are finishing A Wrinkle in Time, the final chapter. We're going to read the final part of the final chapter. Chapter 12 is called The Foolish and the Weak. Wow, what a title for the last chapter, right? The Foolish and the Weak. Well, that sort of is the opposite of what's about to happen for Meg. Meg, our lead character, my favorite unpopular fictional character. That's the whole point of me reading this story, is that I just love Meg so much. She reminds me so much of how I felt when I was young. I felt exactly like her. And in the story, she is finding her power. She is not going to be foolish or weak at all. She is going to find her courage. She is going to find out what the most powerful forces in the universe are. We've been celebrating quite a few of those powerful forces as we've been reading this book. We've been celebrating growing up, which is what she's doing. We've been celebrating senses, like seeing and feeling. We've been celebrating shapes, like the Tesseract. We've been celebrating gardens and food and the importance of eating and breathing and taking good care of our bodies and resting, which is what Meg has just been doing with Aunt Beast. We've been celebrating finding a happy medium and celebrating our faults as well, which faults are going to always come in handy. Don't worry, guys. Every bit of you is there for a reason. You are a beautiful being. Thank you for joining me. We've got some great music, including something from our own Penny Towers from Plainfield. See if you can recognize that one. Thanks for joining me.
What a day, filled with surprises. What a day, what a day. Friends by your side, no matter what the weather. When we're all here together, it just keeps on getting better. What a day, oh what a day. You never know what can happen. You never know who you'll see. Maybe dreams and wishes can come true. Today it happened to me. What a day, what a day, filled with surprises. What a day, what a day. Friends by your side, no matter what the weather. When we're all here together, it just keeps on getting better. What a day, oh what a day.
can happen. You never know what you'll do. Every wish and every dream is waiting to happen to you. What a day, what a day, filled with surprises. What a day, friends by your side. No matter what the weather, when we're all here together, it just keeps on getting better. What a day, oh what a day, what a day, oh what a day, what a day, oh what a day, what a day.
That makes them push around. But if you like yourself, then you won't feel you'll have to stay. It takes lots of courage then to turn and walk away.
La 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 la.
There are those who only see the bad things all around. They're the ones who are afraid the world is going down. If you decide you want to see your life with sunny skies, then all of those around you will see courage in your eyes.
La 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 la.
If you're gonna speak up, then say something. If you're gonna stand up, then stand for something. If you're gonna march on, then do something with the courage in your heart. If you're gonna smile, then smile on someone. If you're gonna reach out, then touch someone. If you wanna feel good, then help someone. Find the courage in your heart. You'll find the courage in your heart. There are those who follow those who take the darker side. It's courage that will pull you out if you would just decide. Then you can be the leader, and then those who follow you can help the lives of others, and then they will do it too.
La 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 la.
If you're gonna speak up, then say something. If you're gonna stand up, then stand for something. If you're gonna march on, then do something with the courage in your heart. If you're gonna smile, then smile on someone. If you're gonna reach out, then touch someone. If you wanna feel good, then help someone. Find the courage in your heart. You'll find the courage in your heart. Say, I can do it.
I can do it.
I know I can.
I know I can.
Because I am.
Because I am.
What I believe I am.
What I believe I am.
La, la, la. Say something. Be gonna stand up, then stand for something. Be gonna march on, then do something with the courage in your heart. If you're gonna smile, then smile on someone. Be gonna reach out, then touch someone. If you wanna feel good, then help someone. Find the courage in your heart. You'll find the courage in your heart. The courage in your heart.
We've never done this before. And we may never do it again, but we're gonna try it.
Burnt to a crisp, his brain rolled down the crowded avenue. But nobody noticed. That was a problem. Nobody noticed. His mind was melted on the edges by the world's destructive nature, its negative flow. its apathetic overview. But nobody reacted. That was the problem. Nobody reacted. It rolled on by, gathering speed, still filled with new ideas, faith, and hope for the future of the Earth. But nobody cared. That was the problem. Nobody cared. At least he was going in the right direction, and the big blue truck swerved in the nick of time, finally causing heads to turn in mild concern.
Kid I be someday. He's not scared of anything. He knows just what to say. He's taller and he's older, but he looks a lot like me. The kid behind the mirror is the kid I want to be. He walks out on the playground knowing he's the one they'll choose. He always seems to win the game. He never seems to lose. He runs and jumps and wrestles. He's not clumsy in the gym. He never falls on his face when the teacher calls on him. He's the kid who doesn't mind if other people see him. He is just so confident that I can't wait to be him. Arithmetic's no problem, he can multiply with ease. While I have trouble adding up a couple twos and threes. Spelling tests are fun for him, for me they're really not. When teacher's asking questions, he holds up his hand a lot. The kid who doesn't mind if other people see him. He is just so confident that I can't wait to be him. The kid behind the mirror is the kid I'll be someday. He's not scared of anything. He knows just what to say. He's taller and he's older, but he looks a lot like me. Kid behind the mirror is the kid I wanna be. He's taller and he's older, but he looks a lot like me. The kid behind the mirror is the kid I wanna be.
Well, folks, how did you like that song, The Kid Behind the Mirror? I really like that one because I do like to look myself in the eyes in the mirror. I like to do that because I like to see who I really am, you know, and we are all becoming that kid behind the mirror. So am I. I'm still growing into that kid that I want to be, right? That one with all the courage and who knows the answers and or at least is willing to give it their best shot and raise their hand and not collapse on the desk when the teacher calls on them. We're all becoming that greater version of ourselves. The trick is knowing that it's making the mistakes along the way. That's part of the process. That is the process. We have to make those mistakes. That's part of it. And we have to have faults. You know, they are our strengths in the end. We have to learn how to use them. in the right way, that's all, at the right times. And so I love that song. That was just so perfect for our chapter, our final chapter from A Wrinkle in Time, as Meg becomes more of the kid behind the mirror that she is growing up to be. It's very exciting. I'm glad you're joining me for this chapter. And also before that, we had a short little piece by Penny Towers here in Plainfield, who apparently did a bunch of kids' music too. I need to find her kids' stuff too. But this one was called Burnt to a Crisp. And I just love how perfect all the music is that I can find for my shows every week. That one was just perfect. It said nobody reacted. Nobody noticed, nobody cared, and that was the problem, right? And that is the problem. Just like Mrs. Witch said way back in the chapter about the Tesseract, she said, there will no longer be so many pleasant things to look at if responsible people do not do something about the unpleasant ones. And I just love that, because that is what Meg is learning to be right now before our very eyes. She's learning to become responsible and address those unpleasant things, as unfun as that can be sometimes. Also, that phrase from Penny's Burnt to a Crisp, nobody reacted, nobody noticed, nobody cared, has within it the most powerful two-letter word that we've also been celebrating in A Wrinkle in Time. No. N-O, no. And I thought it would have been fun. I should have done this from the beginning. Wouldn't it be fun if every time we heard the word no in the story, we jumped? Just get up out of your chair and jump. Or if you can't get up out of your chair and jump, clap. Or put your hands on your head or stick your arms in the air. Somehow let the world know that you recognized that powerful word no, because it comes up in every chapter. It really is a theme in this book. Because I think it has a lot to do with helping Mrs. Witch with the situation we're in, right? Addressing the unpleasant things. All right. So here we go. A Wrinkle in Time. Madeline L'Engle is the author. Thank you so much, Madeline, for this amazing book. We are on the final chapter, the final pages. And we left off in the beginning of chapter 12. Let's see here. Whoops, wrong page. Yeah, we left off in the middle of chapter 12, or the beginning of chapter 12, which is called The Foolish and the Weak. And we left off with Meg, and she's with Aunt Beast and all the other beasts on this planet. And Mrs. Witch and Mrs. Who and Mrs. What's-It have just arrived. And Meg is trying to get her father to take responsibility for getting Charles Wallace out from its power. And then all of a sudden, it occurs to her on page 195. Here we go. Mrs. Witch's voice was grave. What do you understand? That it has to be me. It can't be anyone else. I don't understand Charles, but he understands me. I'm the one who's closest to him. Father's been away for so long, since Charles Wallace was a baby. They don't know each other. And Kelvin's only known Charles for such a little time. If it had been longer, then he would have been the one, but... Oh, I see, I understand. It has to be me. There isn't anyone else. Mr. Murray, who had been sitting, his elbows on his knees, his chin in his fists, rose. I will not allow it. Why? Mrs. Witch demanded. Look, I don't know what or who you are, and at this point, I don't care. I will not allow my daughter to go alone into this danger. Why? You know what the outcome will probably be, and she's weak now, weaker than she was before. She was almost killed by the black thing. I fail to understand how you can even consider such a thing. Kelvin jumped down. Maybe it's right about you, or maybe you're in league with it. I'm the one who should go if anybody goes. Why did you bring me along at all, to take care of Meg? You said so yourself. But you have done that, Mrs. What's-It assured him. I haven't done anything. Kelvin shouted. You can't send Meg. I won't allow it. I'll put my foot down. I won't permit it. Don't you see that you're making something that is already hard for Meg even harder? Mrs. Whatsit asked him. Aunt Beast turned tentacles toward Mrs. Whatsit. Is she strong enough to test her again? You know what she has been through. If Witch takes her, she can manage, Mrs. Whatsit said. If it will help, I could go too and hold her. Aunt Beast's arm went around Meg and tightened. Oh, Aunt Beast, Meg started. But Mrs. Whatsit cut her off. No. I was afraid not, Aunt Beast said humbly. I just wanted you to know that I would.
Mrs. Whatsit,
Mr. Murray frowned and pushed his hair back from his face. Then he shoved with his middle finger at his nose as though he were trying to get spectacles closer to his eyes.
Are you remembering that she is only a child?
And she's backward? Kelvin bellowed. I resent that, Meg said hotly, hoping that indignation would control her trembling. I'm better than you at math, and you know it. Do you have the courage to go alone? Mrs. Whatsit asked her. Meg's voice was flat. No, but it doesn't matter. She turned to her father and Kelvin. You know it's the only thing to do. You know they'd never send me alone if...
How do we know they're not in league with it? Mr. Murray demanded.
Father!
No, Meg, Mrs. Whatsit said.
I do not blame your father for being angry and suspicious and frightened. And I cannot pretend that we are doing anything but sending you into the gravest kind of danger. I have to acknowledge quite openly that it may be a fatal danger. I know this, but I do not believe it, and the happy medium doesn't believe it either.
Can't she see what's going to happen? Kelvin asked.
Oh, not in this kind of a thing. Mrs. Whatsit sounded surprised at his question. If we knew ahead of time what was going to happen, we'd be like the people on Kamazots, with no lives of our own, with everything all planned and done for us. How can I explain it to you? Oh, I know. In your language, you have a form of poetry called the sonnet.
Yes, yes, Kelvin said impatiently. What's that got to do with the happy medium?
Kindly pay me the courtesy of listening to me. Mrs. Whatsit's voice was stern, and for a moment Kelvin stopped pawing the ground like a nervous colt. It is a very strict form of poetry, is it not?
Yes.
There are 14 lines, I believe, all in iambic pentameter. It's a very strict rhythm or meter, yes?
Yes, Kelvin nodded.
And each line has to end with a rigid rhyme pattern. And if the poet does not do it exactly this way, it is not a sonnet, is it?
No.
But within this strict form, the poet has complete freedom to say whatever he wants, doesn't he?
Yes, Kelvin nodded again.
So, Mrs. Whatsit said.
So what?
Oh, do not be stupid, boy, Mrs. Whatsit scolded. You know perfectly well what I'm driving at.
You mean you're comparing our lives to a sonnet? A strict form, but freedom within it?
Yes, Mrs. Whatsit said. You're given the form, but you have to write the sonnet yourself. What you say is completely up to you.
Please, Meg said, please. If I've got to go, I want to go and get it over with. Each minute you put it off makes it harder.
She is right, boomed Mrs. Witch's voice. It is time.
You may say goodbye, Mrs. Whatsit was giving her not permission, but a command.
Meg curtsied clumsily to the beasts.
thank you all very much. I know you saved my life. She did not add what she could not help thinking. Saved it for what? So that it could get me? She put her arms about Aunt Beast, pressed up against the soft, fragrant fur. Thank you, she whispered. I love you. And I you, little one. Aunt Beast pressed gentle tendrils against Meg's face. Cal, Meg said, holding out her hand. Kelvin came to her and took her hand, and then drew her roughly to him and kissed her. He didn't say anything, and he turned away before he had a chance to see the surprised happiness that brightened Meg's eyes. At last, she turned to her father. I'm sorry, father. He took both her hands in his, bent down to her with his short-sighted eyes. Sorry for what, Megatron? Tears almost came to her eyes at the gentle use of the old nickname. I wanted you to do it all for me. I wanted everything to be all easy and simple. So I tried to pretend that it was all your fault, because I was scared and I didn't want to have to do anything myself. But I wanted to do it for you, Mr. Murray said. That's what every parent wants. He looked into her dark, frightened eyes. I won't let you go, Meg. I am going. No, Mrs. What's-It's voice was sterner than Meg had ever heard it. You are going to allow Meg the privilege of accepting this danger. You are a wise man, Mr. Murray. You are going to let her go. Mr. Murray sighed. He drew Meg close to him. Ah, little Mega Parsec, don't be afraid to be afraid. We will try to have courage for you. That is all we can do. Your mother... Mother was always shoving me out into the world, Meg said. She'd want me to do this. You know she would. Tell her... She started, choked, then held up her head and said, No, never mind. I'll tell her myself. Good girl, of course you will. Now Meg walked slowly around the great table to where Mrs. What's-It was still poised between the columns. Are you going with me? No, only Mrs. Witch. The black thing... Fear made Meg's voice tremble. When father tested me through it, it almost got me. Your father is singularly inexperienced, Mrs. What's-It said, though a fine man and worth teaching. At the moment, he still treats Tessering as though he were working with a machine. We will not let the black thing get you, I don't think. This was not exactly comforting. The momentary vision and faith that had come to Meg dwindled. But suppose I can't get Charles Wallace away from it? Stop, Mrs. What's-It held up her hand. We gave you gifts the last time we took you to Kamazotz. We will not let you go empty-handed this time. But what we can give you now is nothing you can touch with your hands. I give you my love, Meg. Never forget that. My love... always. Mrs. Who, eyes shining behind spectacles, beamed at Meg. Meg felt her in her blazer pocket and handed back the spectacles she had used on Kamazotz. Your father is right, Mrs. Who took the spectacles and hid them somewhere in the folds of her robes. The virtue is gone from them, and what I have to give you this time you must try to understand, not word by word, but in a flash, as you understood the Tesseract. Listen, Meg, listen well. The foolish of God... I'm sorry, let me begin again, Meg. The foolishness of God is wiser than men. And the weakness of God is stronger than men. For ye see your calling, brethren, how not that many wise men are, and not that many mighty, and not that many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And base things of the world, and things which are despised, hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are. She paused, and then she said, May the right prevail. Her spectacles seemed to flicker. Behind her, through her, one of the columns became visible. There was a final gleam from the glasses, and she was gone. Meg looked nervously to where Mrs. Wutsit had been standing before Mrs. Who spoke, but Mrs. Wutsit was no longer there. No, Mr. Murray cried and stepped toward Meg. Mrs. Witch's voice came through her shimmer. I cannot hold your hand, child. Immediately, Meg was swept into darkness, into nothingness, and then into the icy, devouring cold of the black thing. Mrs. Witch won't let it get me, she thought over and over, while the cold of the black thing seemed to crunch at her bones. Then they were through it, and she was standing breathlessly on her feet on the same hill on which they had first landed on Kamazats. She was cold and a little numb, but no worse than she had often been in the winter in the country when she had spent an afternoon skating on the pond. She looked around. She was completely alone. Her heart began to pound. Then, seeming to echo from all around her, came Mrs. Witch's unforgettable voice. I have not given you my gift. You have something that it has not. This is something is your own weapon. But you must find it for yourself. Then the voice ceased, and Meg knew that she was alone. She walked slowly down the hill, her heart thumping painfully against her ribs. There below her was the same row of identical houses they had seen before, and beyond the linear buildings of the city. She walked along the quiet street. It was dark, and the street was deserted. No children playing ball or skipping rope. No mother figures at the doors. No father figures returning from work. In the same window of each house was a light, and as Meg walked down the street, all the lights were extinguished simultaneously. Was it because of her presence, or was it simply that it was time for lights out? She felt numb, beyond rage or disappointment or even fear. She put one foot ahead of the other with precise regularity, not allowing her pace to lag. She was not thinking. She was not planning. She was simply walking slowly but steadily toward the city and the domed building where it lay. Now she approached the outlying buildings of the city. Each of them was a vertical line of light, but it was a dim, eerie light, not the warm light of stairways and cities at home. And there were no isolated, brightly lit windows where someone was working late or an office was being cleaned. Out of each building came one man, perhaps a watchman, and each man started walking the width of the building. They appeared not to see her. At any rate, they paid no attention to her whatsoever, and she went on past them. What have I got that it hasn't got? She thought suddenly. What have I possibly got? Now she was walking by the tallest of the business buildings. More dim vertical lines of light. The walls glowed slightly to give a faint illumination to the streets. Central Intelligence was ahead of her. Was the man with the red eyes still sitting there? Or was he allowed to go to bed? But this was not where she must go, though the man with the red eyes seemed the kind old gentleman he claimed to be when compared with it. But he was no longer of any consequence in the search for Charles Wallace. She must go directly to it. It isn't used to being resisted. Father said that's how he managed, and how Kelvin and I managed as long as we did. Father saved me then. There's nobody here to save me now. I have to do it myself. I have to resist it by myself. Is that what I have that it hasn't got? No, I'm sure it can resist. It just isn't used to having other people resist. Central Intelligence blocked, with its huge rectangle, the end of the square. She turned to walk around it, and almost imperceptibly, her steps slowed. It was not far to the great dome which housed it. I'm going to Charles Wallace. That's important. That's what I have to think of. I wish I could feel numb again the way I did at first. Suppose it has him somewhere else. Suppose he isn't there. I have to go there first anyhow. That's the only way I can find out. Her steps got slower and slower as she passed the great bronzed doors, the huge slabs of the Central Intelligence Building, as she finally saw ahead of her the strange, light, pulsing dome of it. Father said it was all right for me to be afraid. He said to go ahead and be afraid. And Mrs. Who said, I don't understand what she said, but I think it was meant to make me not hate being only me, and me being the way I am. And Mrs. Watsit said to remember that she loves me. That's what I have to think about, not about being afraid or not as smart as it. Mrs. Watsit loves me. That's quite something, to be loved by someone like Mrs. Watsit. She was there. No matter how slowly her feet had taken her at the end, they had taken her there. Directly ahead of her was the circular building, its walls glowing with violet flame, its silvery roof pulsing with a light that seemed to Meg to be insane. Again, she could feel the light, neither warm nor cold, but reaching out to touch her, pulling her toward it. There was a sudden sucking, and she was within. It was as though the wind had been knocked out of her. She gasped for breath in her own rhythm, not the permeating pulsing of it. She could feel the inexorable beat within her body, controlling her heart, her lungs. But not herself, not Meg. It did not quite have her. She blinked her eyes rapidly against the rhythm until the redness before them cleared and she could see. There was the brain. There was it, lying, pulsing, and quivering on the dais, soft and exposed and nauseating. Charles Wallace was crouched beside it, his eyes still slowly twirling, his jaw still slack, as she had seen him before, with a tick in his forehead, reiterating the revolting rhythm of it. As she saw him, it was again as though she had been punched in the stomach, for she had to realize afresh that she was seeing Charles, and yet it was not Charles at all. Where was Charles Wallace, her own beloved Charles Wallace? What is it that I have got that it hasn't got? You have nothing that it hasn't got, Charles Wallace said coldly. How nice to have you back, dear sister. We have been waiting for you. We knew that Mrs. What's-It would send you. She is a friend of ours, you know. For an appalling moment, Meg believed, and in that moment, she felt her brain being gathered up into it. No, she screamed at the top of her lungs. No, you lie. For a moment, she was free from its clutches again. As long as I can stay angry enough, it can't get me. Is that what I have that it doesn't have? Nonsense, Charles said. You have nothing that it doesn't have. You're lying, she replied, and she felt only anger toward this boy who was not Charles Wallace. Not Charles Wallace at all. No, it was not anger. It was loathing. It was hatred, sheer and unadulterated. And as she became lost in hatred, she also began to be lost in it. The red miasma swam before her eyes. Her stomach churned in its rhythm. Her body trembled with the strength of her hatred and the strength of it. With the last vestige of consciousness, she jerked her mind and body. Hate was nothing that it didn't have. It knew all about hate. You are lying about that, and you are lying about Mrs. What's-It, she screamed. Mrs. What's-It hates you, Charles Wallace said. And that was where it made its fatal mistake. For as Meg said automatically, Mrs. What's-It loves me. That's what she told me, that she loves me. Suddenly, she knew. Love. That was what she had that it did not have. She had Mrs. What's-It's love, and her father's, and her mother's, and the real Charles Wallace's love, and the twins, and Aunt Beast's. And she had her love for them. But how could she use it? What was she meant to do? If she could give love to it, perhaps it would shrivel up and die, for she was sure that it could not withstand love. But she, in all her weakness and foolishness and baseness and nothingness, was incapable of loving it. Perhaps it was not too much to ask of her, but she could not do it. But she could love Charles Wallace. She could stand there, and she could love Charles Wallace, her own Charles Wallace, the real Charles Wallace, the child for whom she had come back to Kamazats, to it, the baby who was so much more than she was and who was yet so utterly vulnerable. She could love Charles Wallace. Charles, Charles, I love you, my baby brother who always takes care of me. Come back to me, Charles Wallace. Come away from it. Come back. Come home. I love you, Charles. Oh, Charles Wallace, I love you. Tears were streaming down her cheeks, but she was unaware of them. Now she was even able to look at him, at this animated thing that was not her own Charles Wallace at all. She was able to look and love. I love you. Charles Wallace, you are my darling and my dear and the light of my life and the treasure of my heart. I love you, I love you, I love you. Slowly, his mouth closed. Slowly, his eyes stopped their twirling. The tick in the forehead ceased and ceased its revolting twitch. Slowly, he advanced toward her. I love you, she cried. I love you, Charles. I love you. Then suddenly he was running, pelting. He was in her arms. He was shrieking with sobs. Meg, Meg, Meg. I love you, Charles, she cried again, her sobs almost as loud as his, her tears mingling with his. I love you. I love you. I love you. A whirl of darkness, an icy cold blast, an angry, resentful howl that seemed to tear through her. Darkness again. Through the darkness, to save her, came the sense of Mrs. Wutsit's presence, so that she knew it could not be it who now had her in its clutches. And then the feeling of earth beneath her, of something in her arms, and she was rolling over on the sweet-smelling autumnal earth, and Charles Wallace was crying out, "Meg! Oh, Meg!" Now she was hugging him close to her, and his little arms were clasped tightly about her neck. "Meg, you saved me! You saved me!" he said over and over again. "Meg!" came a call, and there were her father and Calvin hurrying through the darkness toward them. Still holding Charles, she struggled to stand up and look around. "Father! Cal! Where are we?" Charles Wallace, holding her hand tightly, was looking around too, and suddenly he laughed his own sweet, contagious laugh. "In the twins' vegetable garden, and we landed in the broccoli." Meg began to laugh too, at the same time that she was trying to hug her father, to hug Calvin, and to not let go of Charles Wallace for one second. "Meg, you did it!" Calvin shouted. "You saved Charles." "I'm very proud of you, my daughter." Mr. Murray kissed her gravely and then turned toward the house. "Now, I must go in to Mother." Meg could tell that he was trying to control his anxiety and eagerness. "Look," she pointed to the house, and there were the twins and Mrs. Murray walking toward them through the long, wet grass. "First thing tomorrow, I must get some new glasses," Mr. Murray said, squinting in the moonlight, and then started to run toward his wife. Denny's voice came crossly over the lawn. "Hey, Meg, it's bedtime." Sandy suddenly yelled, "Father!" Mr. Murray was running across the lawn, Mrs. Murray running toward him, and they were in each other's arms. And then there was a tremendous, happy jumble of arms and legs and hugging. The older Murrays and Meg and Charles Wallace and the twins and Calvin grinning by them until Meg reached out and pulled him in, and Mrs. Murray gave him a special hug all of his own. They were talking and laughing all at once when they were startled by a crash, and Fortinbras, who could not bear being left out of the happiness one second longer, had catapulted his sleek black body right through the screen door to the kitchen. He dashed across the lawn to join in the joy and almost knocked them all over with the exuberance of his greeting. Meg knew all at once that Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which must be near, because all through her she felt a flooding of joy and love that was even greater and deeper than the joy and love which were already there. She stopped laughing and listened, and Charles listened too. Hush! And then there was a whirring, and Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which were standing in front of them, and the joy and love were so tangible that Meg felt that if she only knew where to reach, she could touch it with her bare hands. Mrs. What's-It said breathlessly, "Oh, my darlings, I'm sorry. We don't have time to say goodbye to you properly. You see, we have two..." But they never learned what it was that Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which had to do, for there was a gust of wind, and they were gone. The end.
Miss my dog in my own bedroom, but I had a good time and I'll be home soon. Said goodbye to a lot of new friends, now we're going back home. Pockets are full, got all my things. Hi-ho, rolling home. Trees fly by, the highway sings. Hi-ho, rolling on home.
beach, watched the weather, saw an eagle and I found his feather, rode a bike all day and I learned how to whistle, and I can't wait to get home. We went to the city road on a train, it went under the ground, but we came up again. So many people all in one place, that's why we're going back home. Pockets are full, got all my things, hi-ho, we're rolling home. Trees fly by, the highway sings, hi-ho, we're rolling on home. We camped on a mountain, sat by the fire, Daddy told stories till we got real tired. We all fell asleep, counting up the stars, same ones we got back home. Travel and see new faces, learn everything about a lot of nice places. One special place is all my own, I'll be there when I get home. Hi ho, we're rolling home. Hi ho, we're rolling on home. Slowing down, we're almost there. School in the morning, I don't care. One special place, all my own. Feels so good to be home. It sure feels good to be home.
Is a traveling, be a wandering man. Well, you go one way, see it some kind of fun way. Start exploring the two-way. Wow, it's just like a three-way. When you get to the three-way, can't be sure it's a freeway. Got to find me the true way. That's the only way home.
For joining me today for Amy's Kids Show. It was a very, very exciting day. It was the final chapter, the ending to A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. We have been reading this story since the beginning of August, and we finally came to the amazing ending. And thank you. Thank you for taking the time with me to read this story. It's really such a great story. Meg learns, you know, to become responsible. And in order to become responsible, you have to take a couple of steps first. And we watched her do this in the story. First, she had to learn to become respectful. Respectful actually means to reinspect yourself, to look inside yourself. That's what being respectful means. We think of it as being respectful towards others, but it really starts with being respectful towards ourselves, being aware of our own thinking and our own actions, and not just being mad at ourselves for our faults, but actually appreciating our faults. So it takes quite a bit of time to learn to be respectful. And she did a lot of that in this story. And then she also remembered. She remembered who she is and what's important. And she spent some time remembering and some would say rebirthing with Aunt Beast. She took a little time out. And if you remember, while she was with Aunt Beast, and Aunt Beast was taking such good care of her, Aunt Beast said, Meg, you need to be like an infant again. You need to start over and let us feed you and take care of you and sing to you and dress you. And sometimes, you know, we have to begin again. There is a saying that says it's never too late to have an happy childhood. And that's true. Some grown-ups are still remembering, right? They need to remember, go back to that, learn to crawl again and learn to be a human again if we get off track and we get distracted by it, which can happen to any of us, right? And then finally, number three, she learned to act responsibly. If responsible people do not do something about the unpleasant things, there will not be so many pleasant things left, right? And so Meg became one of those responsible people. And finally, there is a fourth R that I want to share with you, and that R is relentless. All the creatures that Meg and Charles Wallace and Kelvin met along their way were relentless in their fight against it, right? In their struggle to bring light and love to all the dark corners. And that's what we got to do. If you want to know more about Meg and Charles Wallace and their adventures, there are two sequels to A Wrinkle in Time. There's A Wind in the Door and A Swiftly Tilting Planet, which I'm going to go home and start reading today. I won't read them on the air. I'll let you guys read that off air too. That's where I'm going to enjoy it. Have a great Saturday. Thank you for joining me. You're the greatest.
What a day, what a day, filled with surprises. What a day, what a day, friends by your side. No matter what the weather, when we're all here together, it just keeps on getting better. What a day, oh, what a day.